clear intentions. This has to be like your passion. You kind of got to go for it. But I think if you try to do it with too much of a safety net, you're never really going to get there. Like, eventually you're going to have to jump.
Welcome to the Media Corps Minute Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Langmaid. Today in the studio, I'm joined by Rebecca Seuss. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Good.
Yeah, I had a scenic icy ride down.
Beautiful icy ride down.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
I know, I love it. I even checked with you. I'm like, hey, you still up to come down?
Very considerate. Thank you.
Yes.
But for you, I made it happen. Let's do it.
I appreciate it. Well, Rebecca is the owner of the Refinery Skin Clinic up in Burnsville, Minnesota. And just today I learned that you also own a training consulting, what do you call it, agency?
Yeah, business or, like a training company, right? So, yeah.
And you train nurses?
So primarily it's nurses, maybe NPs or physician assistants, sometimes doctors too. But really for some of those, what we in the industry call off-label types of things, right? Okay. So if you're being trained by one of the official companies, you have to follow the rules and you have to be, but that's not how we always do life, So really that's more of the... Let me kind of show you some of the tips and tricks that not everybody knows.
That's great.
And then just doing some consulting as well. People want to know how to get into this field and get into the industry of aesthetics.
It's a growing field.
It's ridiculous. Fast. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. They pop up all over the place all the time.
Right?
It's crazy.
Seriously. It's something that we're never going to stop the aging process, right? So, as the population just continues to... to age and want to do something about it too. I think, without going too far down this, I guess, but we're kind of in this industry where I feel like initially years ago, I've been in this field for 15 years, right? Mm-hmm. So 15 years ago, it was very much you would do a little bit of Botox for a frown line, but really it was still surgical intervention.
Right.
And as we've started to kind of progress and move forward, and it's more of this, you don't always have to do surgery and you can do little things earlier in life so that you don't have to ever really get to that big kind of a treatment. You're seeing things that are getting more, it's more acceptable. And, so we're just kind of doing more with it. And people are kind of finding that it's like, hey, if I can do a little bit of this and I can make my outside match my inside, right? People are working longer. Nobody's retiring at, 55, 60. Maybe some lucky ones, but for the most part, no. And so they're staying in the workforce longer and they just want to look better. And so it's just going to keep growing.
It is.
Yeah.
So before we kind of get into many things, what is the Refinery Skin Clinic and what kind of services do you guys offer?
So the Refinery Skin Clinic is a true medi spa. And so the difference with a medi spa is that it's going to be something where we just offer more of what we would call like the soft aesthetics, right? So Botox, dermal fillers, we have estheticians that do facials and diamond glows and microneedling and laser. We offer cool sculpting. So a lot of those really non-invasive kinds of things. I don't have to operate on you.
Yep.
We're good to go. Versus when you look at like plastic surgery office or, facial plastic surgeons or whatever, where it's more of kind of an operation focused kind of a thing. So that's kind of the main difference between what we do and what somebody else would do.
That's great. Yeah. I think, do you think some of the growth just comes from, because I think in general, the industry is... there's so much more acceptance
mm-hmm,
right now.
Mm-hmm,
everyone, I feel like before, and we've worked with a few med spas, and it's like this idea of, keep it hush hush, you're getting Botox.
Totally.
To where it's pretty mainstream now. Yeah. It's like, it's okay to do these kinds of things.
Yeah, you nailed it.
And that's, so more people want to do it, more people want to get into it.
Totally.
Exciting.
Yeah, and I think that it's an industry that, kind of to your point, right? Like it used to be, it was so taboo. It was only for the wealthy. Mm-hmm. It was a vanity kind of a thing, But I think more with just as there are more products that are available, there's more training, we're kind of expanding what we can do. We're expanding how we look at the face. We're expanding, you know, those kinds of things are just, we're learning more. I really, like I said, it was 15 years ago that I got into this, and it was truly a little bit of Botox for your frown line, maybe a little bit of filler for your smile folds.
Yep.
That was it. That's all you did. And now it's like, I can completely make you look 5 years younger right. by like doing all these different things, and you don't have to have surgery, and it's same day and there's no downtime. Right. Mm-hmm. So people find that really appealing. And I think, you know, kind of looking at how my population, the age of my populations have gone, is that, yeah, most of my patients used to be like 60, 70 years old. Then they got to be more like 40, 50. And now, you know, we're seeing even more of these like kind of late 20s, early
30s. Yeah. It's like the preventative
prevention.
Side,
right.
You know, if you start doing little things here.
Totally.
You're not going to have to do big things later.
Exactly. As with anything, right? Yeah. Just do some maintenance. I always say, if I can grab like every 25-year-old, here's your tidbit. If you're 25, start using a retinol, use your sunscreen every single day, and maybe start dabbling in a little bit of Botox.
Is sunscreen that important? Yeah.
Sunscreen is so important.
Oh, I'm on the boat all summer and I don't.
Dude.
Wear it.
Yeah. Come on. No, because that's okay. So let's just talk about the obvious health benefits of preventing skin cancer, right? Like we don't want
that. Is very bad, yeah.
That's not great. So preventing that piece of it. But yeah, I mean, the sun, UVA, UVA is literally like we call those the ultraviolet aging rays. Those are the things that cause pigmentation in your skin. They cause the fine lines and wrinkles, you know, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, sunscreen
or just
critical.
Stay in your basement.
Right. I mean, we live in Minnesota, right? So my whole thing is always like, you've got probably a solid 6 weeks of nice weather all year long. That's all you got. So, you know, go out and have your fun, but put on your sunscreen and reapply it and wear your hat, you know, but go out and have your fun for sure. And then come see me in October and we'll fix the damage. We'll fix it.
What about men? Do you think it's becoming more acceptable for men too?
Yeah.
More guys coming in or anything like that.
Yeah. I'm never going to sit there and say that, oh, I have a 50-50 practice.
Right,
of course not. Yeah. But I will say that I think that my practice is definitely expanding to maybe where I had like a 2% male population. I think I'm maybe getting a little bit closer to 5-8. And you know who it is? It's the men who are, I'm treating their wives, right? I'm treating their girlfriends. I'm treating their spouse, right? Their partners. And it's, they start looking at them like, God, you look good.
There's
you
something
look good,
to this.
And I'm getting older and you're looking younger and
that's great.
Would it be weird if I went in? You know, so it's, I'm starting to see more of that. I'm starting to see more of my patients bringing in their partners.
That's really fun.
Yeah. So there you go.
You know, we did
on deck.
Yeah, I know we did a video, for Med Spa here in town. It was, you know, fun shoot. And after the fact, just out of nowhere, like, if you were going to do something, what would you do? Never thought of that.
Yeah.
You know, once I'm like, I have no idea right now.
Right? Where would I even start?
But yeah, I mean, it just goes to show like that whole, a lot more male audience are doing, you know, different things.
Well, and that kind of goes to too, like I was talking about how we really have expanded like what we're doing, right? So for example, a couple of dermal filler, I particularly work with the Allergan line, but they just got indications for like chin and jawline for dermal fillers. Men are like, really interesting. Right. So if I'm talking about
a nice jawline.
Yeah. Like if I'm talking about like, how do I lift your cheek and like give you this high cheekbone? Men don't care about that. That's not an aesthetically pleasing look for a man. But when we start talking about defining a chin or defining a jawline, men are like, I'm listening.
Yep.
What have you got to say about that?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think as we start to just kind of look a little bit more about how and learn more about that, that I think men are going to kind of tune in a little bit more. And want to have a seat at that table.
Right.
They may not admit it, but they will.
And it's just, you know, it's one of those things where it's, again, like to your point, what's available? You know, because if I was to go, what do you want to do? Zero clue.
No.
But if you're like, we can do all these things, you're like, okay, that would get me thinking.
You know? I know, you're giving me ideas now. Like, do we need to create a whole separate service menu for men? Kind of highlighting what men might look for versus what a woman would look for.
That's great.
I kind of like that idea, actually. I'm going to make a note.
So we're winding the clocks back.
Yeah, yeah.
So you've been in the industry 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
What's that start look like?
Oh, man. It's a long time to go back.
I've kind of done like a bunch of different things.
I've done a lot of different stuff. Yeah. So I started a floundering 18-year-old, not really knowing what I wanted to do. And so I was working as a cosmetologist. I was doing hair. And it wasn't until Cue Your Violin, I got a divorce and had a young son, mm-hmm. and that cosmetology lifestyle didn't really work out for me as a single mom and, trying to work nights and weekends and finding daycare for that. Yeah. And it's those odd hours and there's not a daycare center that's open, starting at 5 o'clock at night. So, I really was like, God, I gotta figure something else out. Right. So I started working as a receptionist, for kind of this temp agency. And my very first placement, if you will, mm-hmm. was at a dermatology practice. And
in the Twin Cities?
Yeah, yeah. Nice. And I was like, are you kidding me? This is amazing, right? So I'm coming from this background of cosmetology, which is hair, skin, and nails. What does dermatology focus on? Hair, skin, and nails, right? So I was like, I know a lot of this stuff. And it just I was immediately piqued. Yes, I was working as a receptionist, but my interest was like, this isn't what I'm going to do for forever. I've got to figure something out. And it was while I was working there that I had my very first Botox treatment. And I was like, oh, I'm hooked. Like this, I want to be in this all day, every day. So I just started looking at some different career paths. Do I want to do medical assisting? Do I want to do nursing? Like, what do I want to do?
But just all around the industry.
Totally. Yeah. Like, I know that this is just where I want to be.
What's available? Help.
How do I do this and how do I stay here? And, but grow, right? Because I wasn't going to be happy just staying stagnant.
Yep.
That's not my personality. So I started looking at there are jobs. Now keep in mind, this is like 15 years ago. So the nurse injector, what I'm doing now, was a very infantile kind of a thing. It was not a really common kind of a deal. It was still, if you were going to get your aesthetic treatments, you saw a dermatologist or a plastic surgeon and that was kind of it. Right. Yep. So there were a few, and luckily for me, some really amazing mentors that were right here in the Twin Cities that kind of pioneered that that place. I'll name drop Connie Brennan. She's huge. And I love that she's, she went from being kind of a mentor to now like a friend and a peer. And like, so it's just great. And she was right here in the Twin Cities. So she was such a, so just such a force and such a like advocate for getting nurses into doing these injection kinds of things. And so, it was great. So I'm like, okay, well, I just have to go back to school for nursing. How hard could that be? Right. So single mom working as a receptionist, like doing the thing. And I go back to school to be a nurse. Cool.
Which school?
I went to St. Kate's. Go Katie's. So anyway, yeah. So that's awesome. What I did. And then as soon as I graduated from nursing school, I tried applying to like a couple different hospitals and things like that. Cause I'm like, well, I've got all these skills. Maybe this is what I should do. And every single job I applied for, I got 86. Like, no, sorry, you're not what we're looking for. Like just doors slamming. So I'm like, well, okay. And one day I'm flipping through, I don't know, Indeed, like something like that, right? And I come across this position. They're looking for a registered nurse for a facial plastic surgery practice. And it's right in Eagan, Minnesota, right where I live. I'm like, oh, come on. Seriously? And I know my dermatology resume, right? Because I've been working in that derm practice for 5 years at that point in time. I knew with that resume, I'm like, I'm probably kind of a slam dunk for this. Yeah. Let's be honest. And turns out I was.
perfect for this.
Yeah, I'm perfect for this. So that's where I started working. It was at Midwest Facial Plastic Surgery and started working with Dr. Chris Tolan. And to this day, like he's my medical director now. Mm-hmm. So that was, when was that, 2010?
Wow.
Yeah, and so like he, throughout my entire journey, like he's always kind of been there for me, which is super great just to have that support and that whatever. But yeah, so he's the one that taught me how to do injections, like kind of got me going on the path. So I worked as a clinic nurse for a while and I did injections kind of, here and there, like, well, the doctors were in the OR operating. I could be in the clinic seeing post-op and doing some Botox stuff. And then after that, I moved into more of like a bigger healthcare system in more of a management role.
Okay. Yep.
And I kind of thought, oh, this is going to be cool. Cause like, I know a lot about the aesthetic industry. I'm going to move in here and I'm going to kind of shake up the way they do things. And I'm really going to launch their practice. Right. Yes. I really had these grand plans, but it was in a large healthcare system. And if you know anything about corporations, it's literally like trying to turn the battleship.
Yep.
Yeah. And yep. I just, after about a year and a half, 2 years of that, I was just defeated. Yeah. Like, this is no. Like,
those are great, but this is how we do it.
Totally. Yeah. Oh, I really appreciate that. But we have to run it through 9 different departments before we can decide if we can carry that type of Band-Aid. You know, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't do this. No, thank you.
I mean, at that time, was there any, like, oh, I want to own a business?
I think kind of. I mean, I think at that point in time, it's kind of when I really learned, like, you know, I've got a little bit of experience in this and a little bit of experience in that, and I'm kind of good at this. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like, I've got some insight. And I remember feeling very, like, disappointed when I didn't feel like those things were being heard or understood or implemented, because I knew I had more experience in that field, because this was a plastic surgery department. I knew I had more experience in that than, like, obviously, like, high level directors, right? Yep. Like, it's just, that's been my wheelhouse forever. And so when it was just really hard, and I understand it, you know, I understand, like, if you're a bigger corporation, you're a bigger target, right? Yep. So your liability
you
is higher.
A little bit slower, yeah.
Totally. Yep. Yeah. You can't just, like, start making changes here and there. So I get it, but that just was not my, I'm like, that's not how I work.
Yep.
I'm too, like, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go.
So then how do you transition?
So I was at a training, and the physician that was leading the training had a med spa. And he said after the fact, he's like, if that girl's ever looking for a job, let me know. I want her. And so I'm like, interesting, because I'm ready for a change. And I loved that idea, because he was a small business owner, right? He had like 3 little clinics, and it was all, that's where it was just med spa. There was no surgery, right? So before that, in facial plastics and in plastic surgery, I was still doing injections, but I was still working as the clinic nurse too, right? So it was nice seeing like the patients and doing some of that medical care, but that's where I really found like my passion. What I really loved doing was the aesthetic piece of it. Hands-on, working with my patients, like talking to them, being the one that made the change, right? I loved that.
Figuring out like what their like needs and goals and
and having that conversation and then doing it for them, right? Like, my favorite thing is to hand them the mirror, and then when they look in the mirror and they're like, oh, that thing that used to bother me is gone. Oh my gosh, like, I love you. I'm like, I know, I love you too. Like, let's do this. So it's just such a, like, that's what gives me joy, right? So, so I really liked that this was more of like a true med spa. Mm-hmm. And I was there. And I think it was there that, you know, we kind of talk about like that entrepreneurial kind of a thought process. And the physician that I worked for, because he had so many different clinics, he really kind of said, like, this is your location, this is your clinic, like, just do your thing. He was very hands-off, and he just kind of let you make it happen. So I loved it,
that was
right?
Sweet. So you got like a taste of like, oh, I could run, like, this is my, like, you know, my own spot here.
I kind of chuckle. I'm like, I got to practice with daddy's money, right? Quote unquote. Because it was like, I could make a decision. And like, if it didn't land, I'm like, oops, sorry. But like, it didn't, you know, so it's terrible. But yeah, so, but it was a great, it was, but just,
I mean,
such,
even that though, it takes some of the emotion out of it.
Yeah. It was just
sometimes you can make better decisions if it's not.
It's much easier to leap and try something new when, like, your mortgage isn't on the line, right? So, or your family's future. So, yeah. So I really, it was there that I just started to get a lot more kind of connected to the industry, right? So it was there that I kind of had that, a little bit of that kind of entrepreneurial spark.
How long were you there?
3 years.
Okay.
3 years. And yeah, I got really into the industry. I got involved in ISPAN, which is the International Society for Plastic and Aesthetic Nurses. I'd always been a member, but I just really got more involved in it. I got more involved with working with Allergan as an Allergan Medical Institute educator, faculty member there. So I just really kind of dove deep. And then that's kind of when I started Rebecca Seuss Aesthetics, doing some more training and consulting. And, you know, I just really saw that there was this need where, like I said, when I first came on, nurses weren't really doing this.
Right.
And all of a sudden I'm like, everywhere I turn, nurses are doing this. So, but they didn't know how to get started. They didn't know what to do. They kind of thought it was, like I said, take a 4-hour Botox class. Yep. And find a doctor to be my medical director, and then just open up a spot and start injecting Botox, right? No. You own a business.
Yeah.
That's not how it works, right?
Right.
So, yeah, so that's kind of where I was like,
and you have the business side of everything, yep.
What's funny is I heard on one of your previous podcasts, you were talking about a book with the cupcake maker.
Yes.
Do you remember this? Okay, so yeah. I read that book, and it's called The E-Myth.
E-Myth, that is, yeah.
That's
yeah,
it, right? Yeah. So it's called The E-Myth. And he says in there, and I read that book probably about 3 months after opening the Refinery Skin Clinic, right? I'm like, let's just leap and do this thing, and then I'll figure out how to handle it afterwards. That makes sense. So I opened in August. I looked back in my Amazon. I bought this book in December, okay? Like 4 months later. And like chapter one, it says like the fatal flaw, not just like the flaw or the whatever, but the mistake, not flaw, the fatal mistake. I'm like, fatal? Right. The fatal mistake that first small business owners do is that they take a technician, right? They take somebody who's just so good at doing their job. And he's like, you're probably damn good at doing it. But you think that just because you understand and you know the technical work, that you're going to like be successful at the business of it.
As owning it.
Yeah, yeah. And that's not it, right? So, you know, I'm like, and that's kind of what I did. I'm like, oh, I'm a really good injector. You know, the doctor I was working for was selling the business. I didn't really like the direction that the new owners were coming in, kind of the way that they were going and the things that they were doing. And again, it just so happened that like in front of my lap was this, you know, I said I worked in cosmetology, and it was one of the salon owners that I used to work for came to me and said, hey, we haven't talked in a while, but I'm just going to throw this out there. I own a hair salon with a spa, and I don't really want the spa. I want to keep the salon, but I don't want the spa. Thinking, maybe you want the spa, and then you can put all your medical aesthetic stuff in it, and that'd be great, right? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, what?
Yeah, that sounds great, right? I mean, the timing, right? So that's kind of my thing is my entire career, I've never really applied for a job. Jobs have always come to me, and they've always been kind of showing me different sides of myself that I think have serendipitously always led to this moment. But I always said yes, right? That's kind of the big thing. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be a small business owner, you better start to say yes. To opportunity, to chances, to like all of it, you have
even
to say
if it's
yes.
Scary.
Especially if it's scary.
Yeah.
Especially if it's scary, because then that's when you're going to grow. So that was scary, but it was also my out, and it wasn't just okay. Well, let me go work for somebody else. You know. So I took it over, and I did that, and then I read that book that said the fatal flaw is this.
That's hilarious.
Like what? Like the thing that I've.
But I mean, it is crazy though how that. I mean, it happens. Time and time again, and you know, you hear all the statistics about 80% of, you know, small businesses dying before 5 years or something like that, and then, you know, past that, you know, another 80% of that 80 like are gone in the next 5 years, and you're like, you know, to some extent, it's probably a lot of that same. Hey, I'm really good at this.
Yeah,
I think I can go off and do my own thing, and then they do that, and then they figure out all this other business stuff that they have to figure out. And you can do it for a time.
Sure.
You can figure things out, and you can kind of brute force your way through different things. But you're always going to get to like a fork in the road, I think, to where do I want to keep doing this or do I want to grow? If I want to grow, that takes a new skill set.
That's right. And I think that, you know, again, not to like plug the book, but in that book, they talk about how it is. Like there's the technician and then there's the manager and then there's the entrepreneur. And you have to figure out as one person how to be all three of those things, right? Because when you first get started, I think in the book, they use the example of like the pie maker, right?
Yeah.
She loves making pies. It's her passion. By the end of it, she hates making pies.
Yep.
She hates it. It's going to work every single day and making a pie. It's getting in the way of all of the other things that she has to do, right? So I do think that what it really taught me was that, yeah, I might be a really good injector, but if it's just me, right, then I'm just setting myself up for burnout, because without me, then that business is nothing.
Right.
So it really taught me, how do I collaborate? How do I bring in, you know, how do I, right? You've heard the saying, a rising tide lifts all ships, right? And so that's where I'm like, how do I make this something where it's not about me? It's not my thing. And I think that that's where a lot of, you know, again, kind of in that consulting piece, that's a lot of what I'm teaching. It's like, yeah, you can take your class, you can take your course, and then you can go in and get a doctor, get some Botox, and start injecting. But what happens when you want to take a vacation?
Right.
Your business shuts down for a week, right? You've got nothing coming in. So really, like, let's start looking at this as like, it's not all about me. It's about this collaboration. And so collaborating with other providers, collaborating with other aspects of the business. Like, you have to know what you don't know. That's huge.
Yes, yes, it is.
I went to school to be a registered nurse, right? A BSN is not an MBA. So although I may be real good at giving you your Botox, taking your vitals, like understanding that piece of it, I had no idea how to read a balance sheet, you know? So I was like, okay, I have to learn it, sure. But what I need to do is really surround myself with people where that's their passion. Like, put people that have passion for things in place. Marketing, meh, that's why I have you, right? I have like ideas. I'm kind of like, this is the image I want to portray, or this is what I want to do, but I'm not going to run around with my iPhone trying to record a video, right? So you find the people who are just passionate and great with what they do, and then you bring them into your circle.
So how did you do that? Because, you know, again, going back, you had an opportunity. You took the opportunity. Did you buy like, was it like the space and the name, or like... like, what did you actually...
What did I purchase?
Yeah.
So basically, I bought their lease because they still had another 8 years on their lease. So basically, I bought their lease, and then I kind of bought their client list, really, their book of business. So I bought that and then their equipment, right? So I didn't have to go in and...
But did you have... was the staff there? Did you have to find your own staff?
They had a couple of estheticians, and then they had a couple of massage therapists, and then I came in as the injectionist, and then I brought with me another esthetician and like a couple of front desk people. So yeah, so some of the staff stayed, some of them didn't, right? I mean, it was a very different alignment, right? So we went from... You work for a spa where the focus is steamy, massage-y facials and, you know, full body massages and wraps, and that's all lovely. But once you interject that medical aesthetics piece, now you've got a medical practice. It's very different than a spa. Just one instance was like somebody came in, I think, for like a brow wax, and we have this like medical history form that they have to fill out. And they're like, what? What is this? And I was like, well, it's different. It's a different business. Yep. Not everybody liked that, right? So, you know, as with anything, it took like a year to really kind of who's going to go, who's going to stay, where's the direction. We kind of had to find our voice.
Yeah.
I think we really tried to be everything to everyone. And then I finally realized you can't make everybody happy. So you just have to be authentic and you have to go with what makes sense for you. And for me, it really made sense to just focus on that medical aesthetics piece.
Right.
So we let the massage part of it go. We let the body treatments and wraps go. And we just focused on what was us. And then that was more of just the aesthetics piece of it.
And that's where you started to really see growth.
Yeah. So I think, you know, what's really funny is I kind of use this analogy of, I feel like, so we opened in August of 2017, and from August of 2017 until probably June of 2020, after reopening, after being shut down, I felt like I was pushing an enormous boulder uphill. Like just every day was a grind. I had to fight for every single thing that was going on. Like, it just wasn't, I don't know, it just wasn't easy. After we reopened, I don't know if it's just because, you know, we had to keep rescheduling people. So all of a sudden we open up and it's just this full book of business. We are booked from 10 a.m. till 8 p.m. at night, Monday through Friday. Like, it's insane. And I finally started to feel like that boulder started going down the other side of the hill. Like, it was kind of taking on its own momentum a little bit. I think with seeing that many people come in, the staff kind of had this sigh of relief, right? Because nobody, we were all holding our breath.
Yes.
Right? Are we going to reopen the doors and it's going to be crickets? And so the staff kind of started breathing a sigh of relief. They got a new energy because of this. And I think the other thing that we all heard, right? So this isn't just me. This was all of the staff, was that people came in and they were saying things like, I'm so glad you're still here. Like, I'm so glad you're still open. Like, you know, I was worried about you. I was thinking about you. I was buying as much stuff online as I possibly could, you know, to try to support you in this time. And I think that's where we really realized, like, oh, we've got something bigger here than just doing some Botox. Like, these people care about us. And that was huge. That was huge for us.
No, that's the support that businesses got was, mm-hmm. I mean, I thought that was so cool.
Oh, it was amazing, wasn't it? Yeah, it really made you feel like, oh, this is more than a paycheck. Like, this is more than, you know, something. Like, I'm really doing something for these people. Yeah, it felt great.
I do like the, you know, that, again, the analogy of pushing the boulder up the hill, because I don't think enough people talk about, like, just the sheer fact of how much business can beat you up.
Oh.
And like the emotional roller coaster, the time and energy, the, you know, and we can have extremely good times and it's rock and roll and you never have more fun than that. Mm-hmm. But then on the flip side, it's like, I mean, that can change your mood. It can change like everything.
Everything. Yeah. Like all day. And I think one of the things that I think is really cool, we were talking about this earlier, but the, like, even listening to some of your past podcasts, and some of the guests that you've had on, I don't feel like anybody has had this like super clear point A to point B, right? Nobody like said at 18, I'm going to be an entrepreneur and run a successful business. And it just went up from there. Right. Yeah. Like, no, there are always going to be these like peaks and valleys. And I definitely ran into that. You know, I ran into, you know, especially those first couple of years, staff, right? I couldn't pay them a lot, so I wasn't getting great staff. So we had a lot of turnover. We're constantly like, do we keep massage? Do we not? Like wrestling with that decision and kind of what that was doing, that inner turmoil of coming into a business that was already there and having people, you know, I mean, the people that were there already didn't necessarily want to be taken over. They kind of had a good thing going and they liked it. So there's so much turmoil and yeah, you're right. You know, you kind of get home and you're like, ugh, forget it. Yeah. My one breaking moment, here it is. Here was the, like, I'm giving up. Yeah. Right. And it was March of 2020. We had decided. So again, with the way that our lease was structured is, you know, you have your lease, but you had an option at year four to renew it, or you could get out, kind of that exit clause. And I was like, our space is too big. We don't need this. I'm going to take the kind of that exit clause, but I'm within that same area. So under the same landlord, I'm going to take over a new space. I just want it to be a little bit smaller. Mm-hmm. Cool. Sounds good. So we gave our notice that we weren't renewing the lease for that space. And then we started working on the lease for the new space. Signature day comes. And it is 3 days after we've been forced to shut down, March 2020 pandemic. And I was like, dude, this might be my out, right? Because I didn't know what to expect. Are we going to be shut down for 2 weeks? Are we going to be shut down for 2 years? Like, I don't know what's going to happen. No idea. Yeah. And especially, you know, again, nursing. No. And so my medical background is also telling me, like, we know nothing about anything right now. Seriously, like such uncharted waters. And I sat down and I had a conversation with my husband. We had just sold our house. We had a chunk of money in the bank that was meant to then be used for a new home.
Yep.
And I said, here's the deal. Like, what do I do? Because it could very well run into a situation where I start to gobble up that money that we have in the bank that's meant for our home. I'm going to get schmeepy here. That's meant for our home. That's meant for our family. If I keep going with this, I could be really, like, it's not just me that's going to suffer. Like, it could be all of us. Right. What do you think I do? And he just was like, do you really think you could ever go back to being an employee? like, really? Because I'm like, this is my out, right? Like, I don't have a lease anymore. I'm fine. I could leave.
It's the easiest way to just...
Seriously? Like, I kind of felt like, was this the open door? Right? You've always seen those movies where you're like, if you had just gotten out now, right? But you went too far. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, what do I do? And he was like, I don't think you could ever go back to working for somebody else. Like, you just got to keep going. And what's going to happen is going to happen. I'm so grateful that I had that support, that I had that, like... You can do it. I'm not worried. Why are you worried? I'm not worried. So, okay. And so we signed the lease and we did the build out and we moved locations and we reopened. And my God, Josh, I mean, it's just been like year over year over year, constant growth, like the strongest we've ever been. Like, I am so glad that, you know, he didn't let me give up. I was so scared, you know, and, you, like I said, you just gotta kind of keep saying yes. And when you don't believe in yourself, you have to have people around you that believe in you, right? How do you do it on your own?
I bet that decision, just emotionally taxing on you was probably crazy.
Yeah, it was real tough. Yep. I really, like, you know, I've always known that being a business owner is something that's kind of risky and whatever. But when it was really like my family's future on the line, that scared me. That really scared me. It was that support. I couldn't have done it without that, for sure.
Yeah. The whole idea of just, you know, saying, you know, take risk and do these things. It's easy to say in business and entrepreneurship. Oh yeah. There's always risk involved. And I mean, it's until your butt's on the line when it really, okay, now I understand that saying. And
it gets so real so fast, right? Like, I'll sacrifice myself all day long.
Right.
But when it's my family, well, that's kind of a different story. Yep. It's not their decision. And I'm kind of like that with my staff too, right? Like I've always said, like, God, these guys work so hard at building my dream. It's just crazy to me. Like, that's crazy to me. And
we've worked with you for a bit now, and I know how much you care about your staff.
Yeah. It's huge, isn't it?
Yep.
But how great are they? Like, you've worked with them.
Yeah. I even had a note. I'm like, I mean, just from like the, I don't know, three, four times that we've been with you guys, like, the staff is just awesome.
Yeah.
They're so on board. They love it. Mm-hmm. They love working with you, kind of thing. And you can tell when someone's happy with where they're at.
Yeah.
Because they're flourishing.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of, you know, the other part of this that we kind of forget about is that I think as a small business owner, it's nice because it's still small and intimate, right? Like, you tend not to have thousands of staff members, right? But when you've got this kind of smaller, you really get to know everybody and you get to know them on a really personal level. And what I've learned just from being an employee, and like, what was I missing, right? I want to build something different. I'm not going to reinvent the wheel here. Otherwise, why wouldn't I just go work for somebody? Like, if I want to do this on my own, I want to do it my way. And how do I want to do it differently? And the way that I've really looked at it is you have to build a culture that your employees will fight for and that they want to be a part of. You have to have value statements that everybody agrees on. I could stand up and say, here are our four values. But if everybody, you know, my entire staff is like, no, those aren't any of my values. Why do they care, right? So you have to create something where it's very collaborative. We all sit down, you know, periodically and go over our values and we're like, are these still it? Is this still it? Do we want to like talk about something else? So we put those together. We put this culture together of, it's truly like, this probably isn't popular to say, but it's employee first, not necessarily patient first. Now patient is probably like 1.25 on that list, right? It's like right there, but it's really, if my staff isn't happy, if my staff isn't invested, if my staff isn't cared for or cared about, they're not going to provide good service. So you really have to go back to, what are you doing for your employees and how are you making them happy? We've started working on things like, we do their color insights. So I know, anybody who's done color insights knows, like, I'm a red, and if I'm working with somebody who's a yellow, like...
I've never done that.
Oh, it's so great. It'll just, like, it's It's like having an instruction manual. Yeah. Like, do you want to know how to treat Rebecca? Here's my Color Inside books. Boom. There you go. But because of that, we spend so much time on that. I know that somebody who's a yellow really needs to be like, oh, how were you this weekend? Tell me all about your day. Like, very sunshine and friendly, and they're very feel focused. Mm-hmm. Whereas as a red, for me, I can get very like bullet point, boom, 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 move on to the next thing, boom, 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 move on to the next thing. And that rubs that person the wrong way. So yes. If they know that about me and I know that about them, we work together a lot better. The other thing we started doing is the languages of appreciation in the workplace. We've all heard of the five love languages, right? It's basically that, but it's just tailored towards being in the workplace. So if I come in every Monday and I'm like, you guys, last week is a stellar week, Starbucks gift cards for everybody. But there are like three people there that are like, number one, I hate Starbucks. Yeah. Sorry, Starbucks. But they're like, that's not my jam. Or number two, their language isn't gift giving or gift receiving. It's words of affirmation. And I'm not telling them, I'm not sitting down with them and saying, you know, Josh, God, last week was a great week. You had the best week. I'm not doing that for you. Then half of my staff is going to be like, I feel so appreciated here. And the other half is like, really? Are we working at the same place?
Yes.
So you have to tailor it to each person individually. And because we really spend time doing that, we spend time, like, I know that I have to treat her one way and I have to treat her kind of a different way in order to keep them both very happy. I'm willing to take the time to do that. Why wouldn't I? Mm-hmm. They're fighting for my dream. Absolutely. Yep. Like, so you really get to know them very intimately and get to know like what makes them tick and then treat them accordingly.
Is that part of like the, you know, you had mentioned like just the idea again of kind of changing the industry up a bit.
Yeah.
You know, part of that's got to be employees, but you know, even expounding on that, just being in it for 15 years, seeing different sides of it, how do you feel that you've kind of maybe shifted how things are done? And maybe part of it is the employee side and how they're dealing with, you know, the clients that are coming in and things like that. You know, how do you feel like you've been shifting that?
I think that what we did is, so number one, I think, treating the staff differently, like treating the staff as, they're more of a partner versus an employee. So treating them accordingly so that they treat the patient great. But it's also kind of going back to that value statement. And I think once we really sat down and we figured out what are our core values here, and then we hire accordingly.
Yes.
So, you know, what are your core values? And if they don't align with that of the organization, no, great. Yeah, that's not going to work, right? So one of the things that I said we really need to change, I shouldn't say change, but just something that I saw or I felt was kind of lacking in this industry was authenticity, compassion, and kind of excellence, right? So those are some of the couple of the core, the big core ones. And the reason is when you come in, like think about that. When you come in and you sit in my chair, there's not a more vulnerable place to be, right? We're going to start talking about some big flaws. I always make sure I point it because everybody has fantastic assets as well, right? So I'm always like, your eyes are amazing. Your facial proportions are fantastic. Like your eyebrows, like whatever, right? There's so many good things. Yep. But like, let's just talk about a couple of those things that maybe we can just tweak and make you feel a little bit better about yourself. That's a really vulnerable place to be in.
Absolutely.
And I feel like, in this industry, you have two choices. You can either go for compassion, which is our value, or you can go for exploit. Yeah. You can exploit that. And if you choose to exploit it, you could look at it from the perspective of you maybe are more profitable, right? So I could really say, oh, you're in kind of a rough spot right now. Let me tell you about all of the 19 things that you need to have done, right? And that might be more profitable. But I'm going for compassion.
Well, I think too, you might be more profitable on that one person, but not long term.
Right.
Because that person's going to have a better experience, not go, oh, they, you know, took me for, you know, all this, you know, whatever.
They cashed my check and ran.
And that person's not going to refer you.
Right.
To their friends.
Right.
And you know as much as I do that, some of our business is, do a great job, treat the customer right,
right,
they're going to be a raving fan.
And isn't that when you, especially when you first open, it's not like you have unlimited marketing dollars mm-hmm. to get your name. You're not putting up billboards and running ads and doing, you know, social media ad stuff. And you don't have a lot of those funds and those resources. So honestly, as a brand new business, your marketing dollars should be spent on your client, on your customer, on your, you know, spending that time with them, cultivating that relationship so that they become your advertising. You know, that's huge.
I just read that in a book where it was like, treat your business like the only marketing that is will ever happen
yeah.
is only referrals.
Totally.
You know, and if you're doing business like that, with that perspective of the only thing that is going to get a new person in is that person talking,
mm-hmm.
how are you going to treat them?
Right.
How's that end product going
to
be?
Absolutely. You have to. Mm-hmm. I mean, you just have to. Because I think we also know, especially in the world of social media as it sits right now, because one person with one bad experience can take you down. Right? I mean, that's a bummer.
Crazy.
And you never want to, I won't pander to that by any means.
Yep.
That's, you know, that's never my goal. But it's also, you know, I just feel like when I look at, so one of my data collections is always for new patients, how did you hear about us, right? Don't you have to do that? You got to know, like, where am I putting my money to bring in new clients, right? Mm-hmm. And I really, the first couple of years, it was consistently, my friend Sarah told me about you, my sister Sally sees you, you know, whatever. It was pretty consistently that, with a few other kinds of things here and there. I am seeing a little bit of that shift, where it's maybe more 50-50 between, because we are just spending more money now on other types of marketing. So yep. we're seeing other things come in, but we're probably, I would say, fairly 50-50 split, maybe 40-40 split with still referrals, but then also Google, right? Mm-hmm. My friend gets Botox. I wanted to get Botox. I Googled Botox and you guys popped up, but not only did you pop up, but you popped up with like a 4.9 rating. And I read all of your reviews. And if our reviews are all about the experience that they had
yep.
and about the provider that they saw and about, you know, how just, how cared for they felt and how listened to they felt. And that's huge. I think that's our value. Like, that's what I want to provide. I want people to feel good about themselves. And, you know, I want to put my head on the pillow at night knowing that I did a good job,
right?
Not a sales job. That's not my goal.
Like, yeah, just that whole, real people,
yeah.
You know, it's not just a transaction.
Mm-mm.
You know, you can go to bed feeling good, build a relationship, help this person out.
Yeah. I just had a patient a couple weeks ago that, she came in, so I was doing a training at the clinic, and so she came in as a model for this training. And so we really ended up doing all of the things on her, like all of the things, because it was a training situation. But when we were done, and what had actually happened was, so she was there, she was meant to be like a mid-face model, right? We were just going to do her mid-face, like her cheeks and kind of under eyes and that mm-hmm. stuff. But we worked on doing a full facial consultation, right? And what that looks like, full head to, you know, or hairline to chin, basically. Yep. And what does that look like? And so we kind of pointed out a couple of these different things, and it was kind of a snowy day. So the other model we had canceled, she was just like, I can't drive in, whatever. And so I'm like, well, we could kind of do like all the things on her because we've got time and, you know, why wouldn't we? And so we did. And, when we got done, this was just amazing. Like, we got done and I handed her the mirror. She instantly started crying, which kind of makes you go, is that good or bad? Yeah. Like, I don't know.
Oh, no, what did you do to her?
Yeah, right? What is she seeing that I'm not seeing? But she just looked at me and she was like, I can't even believe it's me. Like, look at me. Like, this is amazing. And just like weeping. And, once we were done, like, she stood up and she kind of stood there looking at me for a little bit. She's like, can I hug you? Is it okay to hug you? And I said, oh my God, I'm so glad you asked. Yes. So like she gave me a hug, but she was just telling me about like what her year had been like, right? Like just, trauma after trauma after trauma. And, kind of with everybody, right? But then she also works in like social work, right? So like she has all of these other people, like she had her own stuff mm-hmm. going on, and then she's taking on from all these other people, whatever. And I just, in that moment, I was like, wow. Because I just kind of listened to my gut and went with it. I did this thing for her and it just changed her world. Like, mm-hmm. how cool is that? Like, I've got a pretty cool job. And I get to do some pretty cool stuff when I get to do that thing, you know, for people. Mm-hmm. I just think it's great. It's so great.
That's awesome.
Wow.
I was just going to ask you too, and this is probably part of it, but, you know, what motivates you for just continual growth? You know, personally, business-wise, mm-hmm. what gets you excited? What keeps you going? What motivates you?
I think because I want to keep helping patients and also staff, right? So I look at it like if I keep growing, I can bring more people in to the refinery. I like that I can, from a staff perspective, I can really help with personal and professional growth. Like let's get you to those next levels. Like let's just keep you educated. Let's keep learning. Let's keep growing. Let's keep advancing. Right. So how do I keep doing that for you? From a staff perspective, mm-hmm. so that they're satisfied and they're happy. And then from a patient perspective, like the more that we grow, kind of the bigger that we get, the bigger reach we have. And so then it's just more people that we can bring in, the more people that we can help, the more people that we can treat the way that we feel we should treat, right? Authenticity, compassion, and excellence. So fantastic, predictable outcomes mm-hmm. with compassionate care, authentic selves. So that's my goal for growth. I just want to reach as many people as I can. I kind of want to show that vision to as many people as I can.
Where do you think the future of the refinery is going?
Oh, well, I mean, sky's the limit.
Yeah.
I think as I get closer to my mid 50s, I'm going to want to look at maybe like a Jamaica location, right? That I'll definitely have to go work at.
Pioneering this one.
Totally. I'm going to have to be there from January until May. I'm sure you all understand. I'm looking at, like, that's kind of where I'm at right now is like, what are the next steps? Do I make what I have now just bigger in one spot?
Right.
Do I take what I have now and put it in different locations, like move it around so that we have multiple locations? I might do a little bit of both, mm-hmm. you know, because I think that where I'm at right now, we've definitely outgrown. It's too small. Like we need more space. So I think definitely within the next couple of years, we're going to see a bigger refinery that gets built. I think I'm going to also, you know, one of the things that I think about is kind of combining that, you know, like we were talking about, like I've got the two different businesses.
Yes.
Make it one, right? So if I build out a bigger location that has space for that, space where I can do, and so, you know, do I make it more of a training program, an apprentice program? Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many different things that you can do because this industry is booming and so many people want to get into it and they don't know how. So, you know, that's kind of long been one of the things that I think a lot of experienced injectors right now are looking at, like, to do this and to do this well. I'm sorry, it's not a 4-hour Botox class. Mm-hmm. And then you like hang your shingle and go do your thing, right? It's truly an apprenticeship. I was fortunate to have that. You know, I was fortunate to work side by side with Dr. Tolan every single day to be able to say, is this right? Should I do it like this? Am I good to go? Like, what do you think? So that was great. And I couldn't imagine not having that kind of an education. So, you know, I kind of look at it like that. Do I just kind of build this into one thing, make it an education program, an apprentice program that's kind of a funneling into then becoming a staff member?
Yes. Yep.
Do I build different locations in different areas? Probably. Like, I'm sure we're going to see that coming. So I think Sky, right? It's a bit of a drive. But I mean, seriously, like it's just, it's, you can go anywhere, right? So I think the sky's the limit. Your only ceiling is the limit to your imagination. Just keep thinking about what you want to do and where you want to go and how you want to do it.
And I think too, like, you know, you're seeing a lot of growth in the business, but right now I feel like there's never been a bigger time for education, training, coaching. Mm-hmm. That is booming right now. Mm-hmm. Online courses, just, I mean, that whole scene of just education and learning. And because I think that could be, you know, it's hard to like compare them both.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you pour some more energy into one, too, like, is that going to take off? And
right. We definitely saw a lot of that. You know, again, when we were all kind of closed down, the pandemic, a lot of the companies, like the bigger companies and aesthetic companies, really very quickly, and again, that's part of the great things about having big, deep pockets, right? But very quickly built out this library of online education and content so that you really could, like, at least you were doing something. You felt like you were still kind of, you weren't just sitting at home, like, watching movies and eating Doritos, which I did a lot of that too. But yeah, I mean, it gave you an opportunity to still kind of be in it. And I think that we're seeing too, like with this industry, it's global, right? Yes. Like this isn't just something we're doing here in Minnesota or in the US or whatever. This is a global growth kind of a thing. And there are a lot of fantastic industry leaders who are in England, who are in South Africa, who are in Australia, you know? And so really kind of being able to have that global connection mm-hmm. is huge. I mean, this industry is all about collaboration and it's all about, you know, what works for you. Cause I'm running into a problem that you were also running into and you figured out a way to fix it. Talk to me about that. Right. Mm-hmm. That's what it's medicine. Like we kind of forget, but it's this, what we're doing is medicine and there are best clinical practices. And so let's kind of figure out what those are together and then develop them.
Right.
Yeah.
That's so exciting.
It's huge. Seriously, it's just the tip of the iceberg. Mm-hmm. Like the last 5 years, there's the growth I've seen happen. It's outstanding. It's outstanding. Every year the industry kind of pulls together their numbers and, you know, yeah. like little by little we're seeing like through the, American Academy of Plastic Surgeons, but, or American Society of Plastic, ASPS, they're pulling out their numbers and we're seeing things like these, like Botox and fillers and laser treatments. And those things are outperforming surgical procedures. Like we're seeing those surgical procedures wow. come down the list and these other things are going up because surgery is downtime, right? Surgery has its place. Like, you know, I'll have people who come in, they're like, can I? And I'm like, nope. Like, sorry. Like I can't with what I have, right? That's just too advanced. It's too much, you know, for, to give you a good result there. Again, there's the authenticity, right? I would love to tell you that I could fix this today for you, but I'm going to need you to go see Dr. Tolan. Right. So, but what we're seeing is kind of to that point, like we talked about earlier, as people start coming in younger,
yes.
we're working on some of these preventative things so that they don't have to go to that surgery option. Yeah. I mean, it may be something that they have to do, but maybe they're not looking at surgery in their 50s. They're looking at surgery 65, 70. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, whatever. So the kind of that sooner you start doing stuff, the better off you're going to be.
How do you think technology's changing and adding to
that?
I mean, because as the industry grows, I mean, the technology and even the companies that are seeing this growth happen go,
yeah,
okay, we need to shift focus and make some products for this kind of stuff.
Yeah, man. Oof. So I think, so for my industry, I think that technology can be a real bonus if it's used appropriately, but it can be a real downside as well. Specifically, you know, I'm thinking about things like Instagram and TikTok and, you know, that kind of stuff, right? Because it's a really quick way to reach maybe a target market, but then you have to be really careful about kind of what you're saying. I mean, because again, like I said, these are, you know, medical procedures that we're talking about. And so I'm seeing a real shift with wanting to reach out to the consumer via these social media platforms, via, like more of that, like kind of technology piece. But you know, at the end of the day, consumer or patient, right? Like, so there's still that, you know, I'll have people who come in, they're like, oh, I saw on Instagram this great like lip technique. I want that. And I'm like, dude, like that's not appropriate for what you're doing. And so then I have to have that conversation.
Misconception.
Yeah. Or like, yeah, that was an amazing before and after result, but that's because they really needed that. If I did that to you, it's not going to be as impactful because it's not your problem. It's not like your case. So I find that it's something that it can be great in that it's really bringing a lot of people in through the front door. But there's a lot of education that needs to happen, right? So it's like, it's just the very tip of the iceberg. It's kind of just letting you know that this thing exists, but then you have to go back to your provider. And then that's where it's really like, okay, let me like break down what's good for you and why this maybe works or why it doesn't maybe work. But I think so that part of it, but I think also like with technology, we can also really use that in a way, like we were kind of talking about earlier, there can be more global connection. We can really utilize that to do more collaboration types of things where maybe you couldn't. Like maybe I'm collaborating with a peer of mine who lives in Texas, right? I can do that now where we necessarily weren't going to set up like a training together because we are on opposite sides of the country. So I think that the technology has it can be, as with anything, right? It can be used for good or it can be used for bad.
Right.
I'm kind of excited about some of the things that are happening.
And how it'll transition. What about from like the equipment side of things?
Oh, there's always new stuff that's coming out. Yeah. There are always new devices. There's always, right? Because like I said, it's kind of global. So really, you'll see something that's working really well in Europe. And then you're like, oh, well, we should bring that to the U.S. Like, we should do this. We should do that. And so I think the sky's the limit as far as that stuff goes. Anything that we can do to just really kind of bring down that non-surgical option. Like, people are hungry for it. So whether that's a new laser, a new technology, a new radio frequency technology, a new ultrasound technology, a new whatever. People love it. I mean, they're looking for it because if it keeps them out of an OR, they're for it.
Right. I mean, you're freezing fat off. So
right.
Like, oh man, like
seriously, like who would have thought? Yeah. Who came up with that one? Yeah. Harvard researchers came up with that one. Yeah. They did. Funny story. Here's your cool sculpting start. This is probably oversimplified, but, a group of Harvard researchers, I don't know if it was like tonsillectomies or I don't know what they were studying, but they were looking at these kids who were constantly sucking on popsicles and how the buckle fat in their cheek would change from one side to the other. Right. And it was from the cold of the popsicle being stuck inside of their cheek. Yeah.
That's right? Hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, that doesn't happen from like one popsicle
a
couple times a week, right. In the middle of summer. So they had to have been, I don't remember what it was, but yeah, I mean, there you go. That's how popsicles in the cheek of children. And now we have body contouring and abdominal truncal reduction. Who would have known?
That's hilarious.
I know. Welcome to the aesthetic industry. That's how it goes.
It's going to go. Yeah. It's going to be crazy.
Right. Yeah. It's just nuts. We find all these things that we're using for medicine, but then they have these great cosmetic side effects. Mm-hmm. So then we use it for that.
Yep.
Yeah. It's kind of fun.
So what would you, and it doesn't have to be in the industry necessarily, but just what would you tell somebody that has a entrepreneurial spirit that's just earlier in their journey? Kind of that advice. There's so many questions when you're just starting.
Right.
Where, why, how, just from what you've learned, what kind of advice would you give that person that's just...
Say yes. Mm. Say yes, jump. Right? The net will appear. Seriously. I think that if... and again, this is for me, it's God. For me, it's religion. For me, it's that I know that if a door opens, I'm supposed to walk through it and the rest will happen. The rest will happen. For somebody, maybe it's just this like spiritual energy. Maybe it's like the universe telling them something. It's manifesting something. Whatever that is for you, I think that if your heart is pure, your intentions are clear, it's going to happen for you. So just go. Like, the net will come, I promise. So, and if it doesn't, right? you lived and you learned, and then maybe you take something like, you know what, that wasn't quite right, but maybe if I tweak it this way and then go there, right? But I think if you have that imagination and you have that desire, it's going to come. That happened with us. I said yes, because what else was I going to do? And as soon as I said yes, like, people were just coming out of the woodwork, right? It was, oh, hey, you know what, my uncle is a clinic administrator. He knows how to run businesses. You know, do you want to meet with him? I'm like, yeah, I want to meet with him. Yeah. Like, yeah, I need that guy. And then when it was like, okay, well, how do I pay you for this? He's like, yeah, I just give my daughter some free Botox. You know, I mean, that's like, that stuff started happening. And then it was like, oh, you know what? I know somebody in marketing. And she was like, hey, like, yeah, I'll put together a logo for you and kind of some stuff. Like, yeah, pay me in some treatments, you know? So it was just very... I knew I was just supposed to do it because everything lined up afterwards. So again, like I think if your intentions with anything, right? I mean, you have to have like clear intentions. This has to be like your passion. You kind of got to go for it. But I think if you try to do it with too much of a safety net, yeah, you're never really going to get there. Like eventually you're going to have to jump.
And you have to fail.
You do. How many times did you fail? Mm-hmm. Like before you really like nailed it?
When we tell the guys and any new hires, it's mm-hmm. just like startups, you're constantly changing. Mm-hmm. And each one of those changes usually a result of this not working.
Right.
We did this, doesn't work. This is the new way.
Do it the other way. Yeah.
And then that's how you continue to grow.
Right. You cannot be afraid of failure. It's we were talking about it with some of our reps, but it was more in the context of sales. But it was like, you know, you have to hear like 10 no's before you get a yes, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, you got to kind of keep going. And you cannot expect every day to be a good day, right? Not every day is going to be a black day, right? You're going to have those days where you're in the red and you're like, what are we going to do? But you got to just keep going. Because again, that's where I think if your intention is pure, like if that desire is pure, if you know what you're doing is a good thing, mm-hmm. you're going to keep going. You're going to know that, yeah, even though there was a bad day, I know I'm supposed to be doing this. So I just need to keep moving forward. I have to keep moving forward. And then on those days that you feel like you really just want to hang it up, man, find some great people to have in your world that you can call, mm-hmm. right? That's... You can't do this alone. You cannot do this alone. You've got to find other business owners who understand what you're going through. You've got to have, you know, a supportive family, a supportive friend group, like somebody somewhere that you can say, I don't know, I don't mm-hmm. think this is it. You need your hype squad, you know?
Yeah.
So that when you're kind of giving up on yourself, you've got somebody else that's like, no way, man. Like, you got to keep doing
this.
And
then you do it for them, though.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, you just... But you have to start with yes. You have to start with yes.
But I do like how you said your intentions are pure. Because mm-hmm. if you're just doing it to make a buck, if right. you don't believe in it, if you don't, you know, those are the things that when those hard times happen, mm-hmm. you won't be able to make through it because you don't truly believe in it.
No. It's not your thing. Mm-hmm. And I think too, you know, it always kind of cracks me up when it's, and I'm sure anybody who has sat here with you could tell you this, that kind of the funniest thought is that small business owners are like in it for the money, right? Because those first few years, there's not a lot of money in it, right? Like, you know, everything that you get, you just put right back into the business. So it is something that there has to be a passion for it. You know, I couldn't just say, oh, you know what? I'm going to open up a fruit stand and be a small business owner with this fruit stand. I don't care. Like, that's not
but it's funny because
going to get me out of bed every day.
I've talked to the people, you know, in the podcast where they do those things,
yeah.
you know, where, hey, you know, I've been a successful business owner. I'm gonna try this out.
Yeah, you know? They dabble in this.
And you dabble in something that you have really no passion or, you know, very much knowledge yeah. in, and it just doesn't work.
It doesn't whatsoever. Work.
And you're like, what happened to that? I thought I was good at this stuff.
Well, because it kind of goes back to that, right? Like, you have to, does it get you out of bed in the morning? Does it get you excited? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, so it's got to do that a little bit. You've got to have a little bit of that, like, I can't wait. I can't wait to like try this new thing or do this or, you know, whatever. So you've got to have some of that energy.
I think when you're more excited on Monday than Friday, that's a good thing.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Yeah. So true.
Well, Rebecca, it's been awesome.
I know. It was so good to see you. Yeah. I love that I got to come down and see you instead of you coming and seeing me all the time.
I got to see the space and everything.
Oh, this was fun. I'm really like, I'm excited for what you're doing. I'm a huge podcast listener. I love podcasts, especially business podcasts. And so there are, you know, lots of ones that I listen to, but this one is fun because it's real people telling their real stories, and it's people that are local, like they
it's
are
close
here.
To still, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not like hearing the story about like some major company owner, national chain, you know, whatever.
How I started Twitter.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Great. Good information. Interesting story.
Right. I love
not relatable.
That's applicable.
Yeah.
Like I want to go like, oh, like I could actually use this nugget that I heard, you know, and. It's not so far
it's
in another
so true.
Realm.
Yeah. And I just, I mean, and then listening to like, oh, I went through that. Mm-hmm. Oh, I can relate to that. Or if it happens, I'd be like, oh, I heard about that. Like, this is what happened to this guy, you know, a year or two ago. I'm going to get through it too. So I think you're doing a really great thing here. I'm super excited for you. I'm super excited for you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you again for coming on.
Thanks, Josh.
And again, listeners, keep listening in. Hope you guys are continuing to learn new things. Keep sharing it out, and we'll see you guys on the next one.